Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. The time is 8:03. Today's April Fool's Day, April 1st, and in attendance is Co-Chair Thomas, Senator Davis, Senator French, and myself, Senator Meyer. So today we're going to continue the hearing on Senate Bill 6, which is relating to pre-kindergarten school programs, sponsored by Senator French and Davis. The committee first heard this bill Friday, March 25th, and we heard since then we've heard several presentations from various pre-K groups, such as Best Beginnings, Rural Cap, Parents as Teachers, Head Start, and etc. So today we want to take any public testimony that there may be on Senate Bill 6. So we'll start with that, and then what we'd like to do is get a progress report from the Department of Education, Early Education, on their pre-K pilot program that's been going on. And so that's the plans for today. Is there anything to come before the committee before we get started? Okay, seeing none, then I think what we'll do is go ahead and go to public testimony, and we'll go off offline here to start with, which is a Kelly McBride. Kelly was with us on Wednesday. Apologize we didn't get to you, Kelly, but hopefully you're with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, so if you could just restate your name and your affiliation, and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, how much time do I have?
How much time do you need? Usually about 3 to 3 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes is
okay.
Normal.
I just wanted to know ahead of time.
Okay.
My name is Kelly McBride, and I am a teacher in the Matsu School District, and I've been working with the Best Beginnings Matsu Early Partnership, but I'm here today to testify as an individual. And here in the Valley, many of our children don't have the opportunity to go to preschool. They might not qualify for special education, or their families might make too much money to qualify for Head Start. Even if they do qualify, they might be on a wait list. I think Mark Lackey said out of about 400 eligible children, we only have slots for about 200. And in kindergarten this year, we had about 1,200 kids, so you can estimate there's roughly 1,200 four-year-olds for next year. Currently, our special education preschools serve about 150 of those four-year-old children that have individual education plans, either because they have a speech-language delay or another early childhood developmental delay. We have one preschool this year that's funded, I think, through a Title I grant, and it serves about 20 children. So that means there's about 850 children that don't have the opportunity to come to a public free preschool. In the Valley, about half of the students that show up for kindergarten are not ready to read, and on standardized assessments at the beginning of the year, 48% of them are below proficient in the reading indicators. Last year in one of our low socioeconomic schools, we had a pilot preschool program that was kind of a hybrid model. We had three kids who had IEPs, and we filled the remaining slots with typical peers. And when those kids went to kindergarten this year, every single one of them is proficient on reading now, and their teacher reports that they have better social skills, they're more ready to learn. You know, they showed up just, you know, ready to sit down and listen to a story, ready to line up and be able to solve conflicts with their peers. About children who attended our special education preschools, about 70% of them will go to kindergarten next year either needing no services or only needing speech therapy. So we know that here in Alaska, early intervention works. And I feel strongly that dollars spent on early childhood education shouldn't be just looked at as an expense, but as an investment. It's hard to think about spending additional money in tough economic times, but this is one area that we know that spending money will save money down the road. So we know that research shows that children who attend preschool are less likely to repeat grades or to require costly interventions or special education services. And it also pays off in long-term dividends because they're more likely to graduate from high school, hold a job, and own a home. They're less likely to end up on welfare or in jail. So investment in early childhood development yields an extraordinary return, not just in dollars, but in the lives of children. And I urge you to vote to approve Senate Bill 6.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. We do have a question for you, Senator.
Okay.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Ms. McBride. Thank you so much for taking the time to testify. Tell me a little bit more about the pilot you ran last year. Was that one of the pilot pre-Ks that the state funded, or was that something that the Mat-Su School District did on its own, or was it a hybrid, or just a few more details, if you would.
Okay, it was something we did on our own. I am the coordinator for our special education preschools, and I had several children who lived out near Willow. And it wasn't really feasible to bus them to Big Lake because, you know, for 3 and 4 year old kids, 2 hours is a real long time to be on the bus for a 2 hour program. And so we created a half time preschool there, and then we added, I think, 7 or 8 just regular kids to that class.
And
to
was,
create a class.
And was the teacher a Mat-Su school district teacher?
Yes, she was.
And it was done at the Willow Elementary School?
Maybe pilot's not the right word. It was something outside of what we typically do. It was just a creative solution for what we needed for that setting.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, I don't think the label matters. It's just something innovative you're doing for kids and part of them. You've got a huge school district to cover, so you've just got to be creative where you can.
Yes. And I know there was a lot of questions about the capacity, and I just think that, you know, if we looked at it creatively, this bill just gives us opportunities to create things like that. And even if one school added, even if each school added one preschool, we'd have a huge impact and give families many more options.
Yeah, thanks so much. Very informative testimony. Really appreciate you coming out to give us your point of view this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Kelly? Kelly, I too want to thank you for your testimony. And again, I apologize for not getting to you last week or Wednesday.
No problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, very good. So let's now go here to Juneau and Carl Rose. Carl's with us. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'll try to be brief. There is a growing awareness of the importance of early childhood development and learning. We had a guest speaker at our conference last November, Dr. Lynn Fielding, who is an early childhood specialist. And in particular, we covered the whole realm of ready for kindergarten and ready to read, early literacy. And to our surprise, with much of the information that was shared, kids start to group themselves in terms of trend lines in learning from the time they're born, and those trend lines are set by the time they're 5 years of age. So if you take particular care with infant children, young children, to prepare them for kindergarten, such as engaging them in conversation, not just reading to them, but actually involving yourself in a rich learning environment for young children, they tend to trend out at the higher rates of learning. I have a diagram, but I don't have it here with me. These trend lines may not change for the rest of their school career because schools are good at teaching content, but not necessarily good at remediation or intervention. So early childhood education is critically important. You'll see some documentation in here about the lower quartile of performance for young children by the time they come to school. And in every case, they are the largest quartile is the lowest performing quartile in terms of reading. And so the issue of early childhood development, these are things that parents, families, and communities can address far better than can government until they get to about 3 to 4 years of age. So that brings us to preschool. I want to share with you that early childhood development and learning goes from infancy to 5 and then K through 3 in terms of reading proficiency. The whole idea here is that if a child is proficient in reading, writing, and mathematics by grade 3, they're prepared for success, and they will succeed. If a child is not prepared, they will struggle, and that is the case with the education results today. Many of our kids did not have a firm foundation, and it shows throughout their career. So I would share with you today, and I can provide more documentation, this growing awareness of the importance of early childhood education is a game changer. And I would offer my support in terms of not only infancy to age five, pre-kindergarten is part of that, and proficiency by grade level three. These are just words, but these are critically important to the success of young people. And I appreciate Senate Bill 6 being brought forward because it is one component of how we prepare our kids for success. So if I could just end by saying this, from birth to age five, there is a rich learning environment that can be provided for young people or infant children through families, parents, and communities. And that's the community-based people that you've heard testify to date. Much after that, I think we need to intervene with pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and focusing on proficiency in grades 1, 2, and 3. With that, I'll end my testimony. I thank you for this opportunity, and we support Senate Bill 6. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rose. Questions? I'm sorry, Senator Thomas has a question, Carl.
It may not be a question as much as it is a comment. I think we all here at this table, anyhow, believe that birth to five, extremely important areas or time frames for kids to learn and learn how to learn. Our problem, I think, is that we're not dealing with those. We're dealing with the ones that are probably 30 to 60 to try and convince them. So it's more of an intervention here than it is a learning, specific learning process, a learning trend. So anyhow, that's part of our problem.
You can
help us.
Are you talking about the legislature or the kids?
The legislature and the general public, I think, and that's where we're at. That's what I'm being a little facetious this morning. So I think any help you can give us with those that aspect of it, I think, is extremely important.
Thank you. Okay, Chris Murray. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
Again, if you could just give us your name and affiliation, please.
Certainly. Good morning. My name is Chris Murray. I have no personal affiliation. I'm just here to speak as a parent in support of Senate Bill 6. I appreciate this opportunity, and I will admit This bill is relatively new to me. I just found out about this a couple of days ago. Did some research, tried to find out some more about it, and felt that I needed to come here today to speak so that my story could be heard. As I mentioned, I am the father, the proud father of a beautiful, bright, happy 18-month-old son. That's not an April Fool's prank. He truly is all these things. My wife and I were thrilled to be raising our children in the state of Alaska. Before we even got pregnant, I was the type of person that would stop people on the street, and I would tell them, I'm trying to have a family. I see that you have young children. Can you give me some tips? Can you help me out here?" And inevitably, with all the various things that people told me, inevitably the discussion always turned to childcare, early education. And I realized that after hearing this from several different people, that there was a crisis and there was a serious issue facing working Alaskan families. The fact that quality, accessible, affordable child care is very difficult to find here in our community, in our state, and across the nation is something that affects me and my family on a daily basis. I'm here today basically, I don't have a ton of statistics. I have read the research. I do know that the majority of brain development occurs before the age of five. But here is one statistic I do have. My son is enrolled and attends a nonprofit school here in Juneau. It's quite, in my estimation, a quality organization. However, I pay almost twice what I would pay for tuition, books, and fees for him to attend that school on a part-time basis. I should say I pay almost twice as much for him to attend this school on a part-time basis than I would in tuition, books, and fees for him to attend a state university. That's a lot of money, and for working Alaskan families, it's a struggle. So any legislation that helps to lessen that burden on my family and on an Alaskan family, even if it's for an extra year, one more year before they would be starting kindergarten, is legislation that I'm here to say that I support and I would welcome in my community. So I thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, very good. Chris, any questions? Seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Chris, I do have a question for you.
Sure.
It's more, just more curiosity than anything.
Yes, Chairman.
What is the daycare or where do you have?
Where's my son attending? Yeah. He's at the Juno Montessori School, okay. And for 4 hours a day, we pay $700 a month. Okay. A full-time child there for a school day from 8:30 until 3:30. Pays almost $1,100 a month.
Hmm. Yeah, it does add up. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, see, is there anyone else who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 6? Okay, seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close the testimony. At this time, what I'd like to do is have the folks that are here from Department of Education Early Development tell us about the existing pre-K program, the pilot program that's in place, and kind of where that's at, where you see that going, and just give us an update and how that may dovetail into or not dovetail into Senate Bill 6. And so we have Ms. Curran and Mr. Sugar with us. So, again, if you could give us your name, affiliation, and just kind of bring the committee up to speed then on the pre-K program that you guys currently have going on.
Good morning, Senator Meyer.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. Cynthia Curran, Director of Teaching and Learning Support, the Department of Education and Early Development.
Yeah. And good morning. Paul Sugar, Department of Education and Early Development.
Okay. Morning.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Last week, the committee asked for some more information regarding the preschool pilot project, asked for a selection of grantees and sites. We told the committee that we would provide that information. So looking on page one of the handout, it talks about the RFA process that we used, how many districts, 24 districts originally thought they might apply. Then it came down to 12 actually applying. We had a process. Using a rubric, and the rubric is on the following four or five pages. So a committee read and scored the applications, and the successful applicants are the ones in bold in that list in front of you. And as you look at the rubric, you can see I'm going to have Mr. Sugar talk to the way it was scored so the committee can understand.
We broke the rubric into larger areas and then sub-areas underneath, but starting with the need for the project, applicants had to demonstrate that, and you can see a list of questions specifically geared towards showing proof of that need, and then the last column shows the amount of scoring per each question within that breakdown. You can see a total of 30 points towards the scoring of this was under the need for the project. The second, and I believe the largest component of the rubric, is the program design. And it is a similar structure there where it lists the number of specific questions designed for them to demonstrate what their specific design and approach will be within this pilot. And again, the scoring amounts 50 points total. And of course, you can see things within here where the requirements are for the implementation and use of the early learning guidelines that the state had created, as well as the use of developmentally appropriate practices. It also moves into other issues around health development, hearing, social emotional development. Again, that links to our early learning guidelines across all of the domain areas of development, including cognitive and general knowledge, which is where the content areas would be addressed as well. It moves into Part C around parent involvement. Again, the same structure on that. Describing how they have activities that are provided to link what's happening with the child to the family, and linking the needs of both the family and the child in terms of as partnership towards school readiness. We move from there into Section D, the adequacy of resources. And in this one, describing their staffing for the proposed program, making sure that they're meeting all of the guidelines and requirements for the level of their staff, and in terms of their child to staff ratio as well, some job descriptions of the positions, and the various types of professional development that these folks need to have gone through in order to provide for the children within the pilots. The next section is the management plan, and again, same structure, looking at the organizational structure that they have set for the program, looking at their timeline for the program implementation, and information on the materials with important key elements pointed out within those materials. So again, how those materials will help them meet the requirements of the grant and provide the links to our state's standards. The next section is on program evaluation, 20 points for that one, looking at how the evaluation information will be used, looking at the different types of data. While we required some specific pieces of information, we know districts will utilize additional data to help them in terms of making the day-to-day decisions of the needs of the children and families. So we look for them to describe those types of things as well. Then previous success or promise of success for 15 points, basically giving them an opportunity to show what experience they have in terms of providing quality early childhood, and if they don't have the experience, what leads them to believe that the structure and models that they're creating will lead to success for their children and families. And and then we look at the budget. They all submitted proposed budgets. After the scoring was completed, then we had folks from early childhood experts from the department, from the university system in the state, and from Best Beginnings involved in the review and the scoring. And then after the scoring was made, we entered into a negotiation process with the highest scoring applications, and negotiated from there. No one actually received the full amount of dollars that they had submitted for, and by doing that, we were able to provide services to six districts through the competition and still maintain the small set aside for the two intervention districts.
Okay, question, Senator French?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question. If this program is continued, we're working out, of course, budget details between the House and the Senate right now. The House cut out all the pilot pre-K money. We put it in the budget. We're hoping we can win in the end. We'll see. But assuming that we are able to keep that in the budget, will you be starting from scratch on this process again, soliciting new applications, or will you, I think, continue just the $2 million of grants you have in place?
I believe what we have previously stated was that we would be looking at one more year to get a third set of data points for the pilot and informing all of those folks to be involved in that they will get their funding for one more year, and then should the funding remain, because I believe it's being moved into the base, I believe that's the process we were looking at, we would then go after that year out to a new competition with that money that would be open to everyone.
Thank you. Thank
and
you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator French, in addition, using what we've learned from that data, from the project outcome data, to inform the next round of competition so that those pieces that have actually produced results, greater results than, because everything has a result, greater results toward increasing student readiness for kindergarten, those are the things that we would be looking for in another round of competition.
Less of a blank slate.
Yes.
Right. And I'm hoping you'll address on page 11 the different sort of curricula used in the different pilots. Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator French, with regard to that, keeping in mind that collaboration and transitioning ready to learn in kindergarten was paramount in this. It was very important for the grantees to work together with the other entities within the school district boundaries that were going to be providing the services. So as you look at these different curricula, you'll see that not everyone used the same curriculum. They were allowed to choose their curriculum. It had to align to the early learning guidelines put out by the department. And you can see the variety of curriculum. So in Anchorage, for example, you see that they use the Houghton Mifflin Early Literacy Curriculum. That ties in with the fact that in those two schools, which are Title I schools that have the preschool pilot project, that's the reading curriculum, the early literacy. It feeds right into their literacy curriculum. You can see the variety, the curriculums that were used. Creative curriculum focuses on all curricular areas. Literacy, we have Curiosity Corner and Bering Strait and Nome Public Schools both use a success for all curriculum. So this Curiosity Corner is something that would transition into that. Open Court and Zoo Phonics were used by Yukon Koyukuk. And then Language Links was used by Lower Kuskokwim. Math, we had Everyday Math and Constructivist Math that were the ones that were specifically listed as being targeting mathematics. Creative curriculum, as I said before, does all of the curricular areas. It's very important when you're working with young children that you have a variety of experiences and you're able to tie those experiences to a variety of areas. And you could see that there was an emphasis on social and emotional and self-regulation curriculums through Sharing Place, Conscious Discipline, and Second Step. So each grantee district was able to choose that which would work for them. And so we are collecting data on that. And if we look a little further back, you'll see what the results were on the outcome assessments. And Mr. Sugar will talk to that in a few minutes.
Sure. Just a quick follow-up. I just noticed, if I'm reading this right, Bering Strait, Nome Public Schools, Yukon Koyukuk didn't have a specific math program, and it didn't have the creative curriculum that covered everything. Do you know what they did in the way of math for their kids?
Right. Through the chair, Senator French, the use of the Curiosity Corner, Success for All, while Success for All is a literacy program, the Curiosity Corner is a multi-content area, but focusing also on the links of those content area developments to literacy development. But it does go across the domains.
Including math?
Including math.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Thomas has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You answered part of my question already from Senator French's question, but And it may have been premature, but I'm assuming it's when you said third year. We started, obviously, September of 9 is what it amounted to, was the first school year. Were there any things that you found almost immediately that were missteps that you changed in the program for the second year? If the answer is no, then we'll continue on. If the answer is yes.
I would say that in terms of the curricular use and discussions and the assessments, everything has remained the same. We did allow flexibility if they saw a change coming curricularly within their district or their local area, they could do that. I would say that we did see some bumps in the road, in particular around how processes and programs that have different administrations and different structures work together. And we at the department worked very hard and long with folks at being able to bring things together. You have one system that works through unionized staff, another system that does not have unionized staff. You have different systems that have set up different job descriptions and different processes for personnel. How do we work those together so that when, say, a Head Start entity and a school district are working together, that people are getting the proper supervision, but that it's going through the proper channels? And there were some missteps around and some of that collaborative effort, but what we found is that what it really tended to lead to was a recognition of the hard work of developing new approaches through multiple systems, and it led to greater depth in the discussion and depth in the level of the collaboration, which we gave the example before of the Anchorage School District, how they worked through their issues, and because of that, they were able to recognize we can do this and we can bring these approaches to many other parts of our system that aren't funded through, and that partnership could continue to create new and additional classrooms following this system, but not utilizing this funding for that. So, there were missteps, and we had some issues where a proposal was made originally to focus both on home visiting as well as in the classroom. But many of the local folks did not want the people coming into their home, and so they had to make adjustments from there. Okay. Those would be a couple of examples.
Thank you.
Okay.
And members of the committee, we were asked about information on district-level assessments. So in the last three pages, there are charts that show that, and we also have a brief narrative, and we're going to address that very briefly for you.
So just for some examples at the district level, on the PPVT, children in the Yukon-Koyukuk made the highest percentage of growth. 31% scored in the top half on that assessment at year end. Both Nome and Juneau saw 38% of their children moving from scoring in the bottom half to then scoring in the top half on the Dial 3 total assessment, which looks at all of language development, motor development, and concept development. In terms of motor development, Alaska's children scored extremely high in general on motor development. I think we brought that up. Nome showed the greatest growth, with 35% of the children in the project moving from scoring in the bottom half to then scoring in the top half when compared to their same age peers nationally. Juneau showed the most growth in concept development on the Dial 3, with 27% of their children moving into the top half after having scored in the bottom half previously in the fall. With a 43% change from scoring in the bottom half in the fall to scoring in the top half in the spring, Nome made the most growth in language development.
Question? Go ahead.
Chair Meyer, we were also asked to bring information about the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council. Would you care to hear that information now?
Sure. I do have a question, though.
Sure.
So we have $2 million currently towards this pilot program. If the dollar amount was $4 million, could you reach twice as many kids, or are you at a point now where this is the most kids that you can handle at any given time?
Chair Meyer, we would be able to reach additional children, yes, remembering that the costs vary between the areas of our state, even for our school districts. I couldn't give you the number of students that we would be able to reach. It would depend on which areas wanted to have the grants and how much the cost would be in those areas. It would not be less children. It would probably be up to as many and maybe more, depending on the areas where the sites were.
Well, I guess my question is, do you have other sites that are wanting to participate but weren't able to? I mean, I don't see anybody here from, for example, Fairbanks.
Right. Senator Meyer, there were originally 24 districts that thought they might apply and then, for whatever reason, did not apply for this particular program. So there were 12 districts that did apply. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough money to give every district a pilot. So I believe that the interest is increasing as we learn more about the pilot project, and there will be more districts that would apply in the future for this.
Okay. And again, I know we're not the finance committee, but after the second year of the program, you're already seeing very good positive results, and the demand is out there for it. Why wouldn't we ask for more money to keep the program going? Maybe that's an unfair question. Maybe that should be left for finance, but if we got something that's working, you know, let's exploit it, in my opinion. But Senator French.
Thank you. I agree wholeheartedly with your views. Thank you. My question is you've told us how you selected school districts. How did the school districts, if you know, select the children for participation in the program?
Through the chair, Senator French. As part of their application process, they needed to show us their eligibility requirements and how they would. This is what the system sets up. In terms of eligibility, we were trying to target the neediest of the needy first,
okay,
and building out from there.
And by that, are you looking at, excuse me for interrupting, are you looking at income levels or learning ability?
Well, it is very similar to the Head Start approach that mm-hmm. Mr. Lackey spoke of, where you're looking at a variety of issues in terms of income eligibility, special needs. Right. Other disabilities, children living in foster home situations, et cetera. And, of course, two-thirds of our programs are in partnership with a Head Start, so that blended very well for those in particular to just adopt those same eligibility approaches. In terms of finding the kids, in some cases, it was going out knocking door to door through, you know, it was late April when the funding was approved, and through the summer people went out, knocked on doors, hey, this is a new program, if you're interested, this is available, here's how you can come and apply for your child to enter. Nome in particular, I know, utilized that, and others went through a variety of public processes. In Bethel, I believe, they went to some of the local QFCs and stores and set up tables throughout the summer, put flyers up. So there was a very concerted effort in terms of making sure that local folks knew the program was available and how they could enter their children.
And just one more question, Mr. Chairman. Is it your sense that there were more kids than spaces, or were they actually sort of having a drum-up business through the door-to-door effort?
through the chair. It's my sense that there were more kids, not necessarily in all communities, again, because of the relative size differences and the fact that we tried to target that geographic distribution to see what it really will take for the smallest and most remote as well as the largest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that same thought in mind, was the attempt to make sure that we had a representative group of kids from the areas, or was it more inclined towards the idea of who would produce the most success potentially, that as things were sorted out as far as who was in attendance?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we did not go into this trying to prove success. We went into this trying to provide a service to those in need and to determine what types of successes we had. The purpose of the pilot was just as much to inform us for hopeful later use as it was to say we have a successful program. We did not enter into this. We hope for success. We believe that the types of processes we were offering and the standards that we set would lead for success. But we went in looking to find out what we would find, not looking for a specific result.
I didn't intend that question to be like somebody was stacking the deck. It was more the idea if we were getting a representative group from each of the areas to make sure that we didn't just have a sorting process done by the community, I guess is what I'm getting at, that would lead to more success than could be generally expected. And I realize that's kind of maybe a delicate question, or maybe some might think, why would he even ask that question? But it's to make sure that we did have a representative group, so when the results came out, we would feel comfortable that this is generally what we can expect, with having a program in place that takes all rather than the one that kind of selects for success, so to speak.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Thomas, keeping in mind that the goal was to work with the neediest children,
mm-hmm.
that gives you your population. And so from there, the gains that were made using the various curricula, the delivery models, the fact that things were aligned with the early learning guidelines, this gives us our information so that we know the things that work better than other things. So as far as having a representative sampling, yes, we have a representative sampling of the neediest of the needy, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that's why I was hoping that we didn't just go out and take those that had already been in Head Start, Montessori, and other programs like that and take them, saying these people obviously are more interested in their kids' education, so therefore we'll go and talk to them about being in the pilot program, which would in some cases make sense that you would seek out those that would be more favorable to being involved. So anyhow, thank you.
And just to follow up.
Sure.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And maybe just for the benefit of Mr. Murray, how big would the program have to get to sort of reach up to, the average citizen's kids? Not that Mr. Murray isn't above average and his kids aren't above average, but you see what I'm saying? If we're targeting sort of the hardest cases, the neediest cases, and I think that's perfectly appropriate, but there's lots of sort of middle-class folks who are working for a living who are having to pay extraordinary amounts of money to put their kids in Montessori. When can they expect, how big would the program have to get? 10 times bigger, 20 times bigger, statewide, to sort of reach most Alaskans? I know it's a hard question, but I got to ask.
Through the chair, Senator French, we hate to look like okay. We have no brains whatsoever this morning. But it would require a statewide, in order to be able to reach the greatest number of children, it would require a statewide program, completely voluntary, which is this was. I mean, just because you knock on a door doesn't mean that somebody has to participate.
Kids, right?
Absolutely. Remembering that in all of this, one size never fits all. And so you have to have a variety of programs, processes, so that parents can choose where they want their child to be. And there will always be a group of parents who will have the most choice of all. But keeping in mind that we need to provide services for everyone so that everyone does have a choice.
Yeah, it almost seems like, to answer your question, Senator French, it would be the fiscal note on this bill, you know, up to $83 million if you open it up to everybody, anybody. And I think that's the goal of the of Senator Davis here, is a program that's not just for the low income, but for all students, for all kids. Okay, did you have something else you wanted to present?
Chair Meyer, we did bring information about the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council.
Okay.
And Mr. Sugar's going to start off with that.
Yes, I did have one with notes, but I seem to have misplaced the one with notes. All right. Just some brief information on the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council. The purpose of the AECCC is to promote positive development, improved health outcomes, and school readiness for children prenatal through age 8 by creating a culturally responsive, comprehensive, and accessible service delivery system. The council will address the integration of multiple early childhood initiatives at the federal, state, and local level. As examples, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, Part C, which focuses on young children birth through 2, Part B 619, the woman who spoke to us this morning from MATSU coordinates those programs out there, which is designed to provide services for special needs children and some of their peers ages 3 to 5. And then Part B of IDEA is all of school K, and in our state it goes through age 21. This council's purview would be looking at then K through 3 portion from there. As well as programs like that, we'd be looking at our Early Childhood Comprehensive Systems Plan, which was developed in 2006 and then revised in 2009. Looking at our Head Start State Collaboration Needs Assessment and Plan, which is updated periodically throughout the years. Our State Child Care and Development Fund Plan, the Alaska Pilot Pre-Kindergarten Project, Early Childhood Health and Nutrition Initiatives, and of course, Best Beginnings Priorities, and all of that really just to name a few of them. So you can see why a coordinating council might truly be advantageous.
So this council was created in October of 2010. It will meet quarterly. The first meeting is May 2nd in Anchorage. During the first year, the council will be creating a statewide early childhood needs assessment so that we can see what the state of the child is in Alaska, a statewide strategic report. And in that report, there would be recommendations for increasing participation of children in early childhood programs, improving professional development for early childhood professionals, improving our state early learning standards, and facilitating the integration and alignment of services, planning efforts, resources, policy development, and funding. Keeping in mind that a goal is not duplication of services, but coordination of services so that people know what's available to them.
Just a little brief history. I touched on this slightly in the introduction with the ECCS plan that started in 2006 and revamped in 2009. We've had our ongoing Head Start collaboration needs assessments and plans. The Improving Head Start for School Readiness Act federally in 2007 was the vehicle that the legislature, federal legislature, chose to move this project forward. So even though the call for all of these various groups to be represented in a state-level council came through the Head Start Act, they took great care to recognize that this is not a Head Start council. This is an all-early childhood council. And they disseminated that not only legislatively and through the U.S. Departments of Education and Health and Human Services, they also disseminated that approach through the National Governors Association as well. As Ms. Curran had spoken in October, the governor issued an administrative order designating what was then called the Interdepartmental Early Childhood Coordinating Council as the body that would become this new state-level advisory council. Of course, at that time, it was only State Department people that were working on that IECCC. Now that we're going statewide, we have branched out and are bringing new people into the structure, in particular from the private sector. In terms of the public sector, the structure of the council will have staff from the governor's office. It will have appropriate department staff and representation from the University of Alaska system. In terms of the private sector coming in, Best Beginnings will be represented, the Alaska Child Care Resource and Referral Network, the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, and a wide variety of associations, including the Superintendents Association, School Boards Association, the Infant Learning Programs Association, and the Head Start Association. We'll also include an Alaska Native Health Provider, a representative from one of those large entities, a mental health provider, a member of the faith-based community, and we took great care to make sure that we also had a representative parent who has a young child serving on the board as well. It was determined that the two commissioners of the Department of Education and Early Development and Health and Social Services would serve as the co-chairs of the council.
So as the committee, the council meets, there will be a synopsis of what happens at the meetings that we would be happy to provide following the meetings. And as more information comes out and the report that will be published, we will be happy to make that copies available to you all. So if there's questions, we'd be happy to take them now.
Just one question. I don't see any members from the legislature on your council. Is that done
by
purposely? Or, you know, because I think some of us may want to participate. Obviously, we can attend any of the meetings, of course, but did you not want somebody from the legislature on the council itself?
Senator Meyer, no, I was, we did not make the list. The list was provided of who would be participating. You certainly are, members of the committee certainly are invited to attend the meetings and listen in. I think the goal was to try to keep it as small a group as possible that can get work done. But I do know that as the committee structure moves forward, there would be opportunities, and we didn't go over the various committees because that truly hasn't been formalized and won't be formalized until the first meeting. There will be opportunities for other people to join in on the committees that are going to be doing the work that would come before the council.
Okay. Well, very good. That's just something I think you should seriously consider, because ultimately we're going to want this to be adequately funded, and as the appropriating body, it's good, I think, to keep us educated on what's going on, and plus we just have interest in this area in general. Okay. Any other questions, Senator Thomas?
Yeah, not necessarily a question, and we're not easily offended, so you can tell us why we're not on the list, but that's fine. But it's a fairly lengthy list of people, and I'm not sure how many representatives from each, but I would echo the co-chair's comments. So you have staff from the governor's office, and I think it would be helpful along the way to have the governor's office and members of the legislature discussing where our program is headed and how we're trying to get there, to be helpful in maybe saving some conversation at a later date as to explaining what all was going on and in the period of time. And I'm not critical of it, but it was set up in 2006 and updated in 2009, and now we're 2011. Is there an anticipated date of delivering a final product or report at this point in time? As you have, you set a guideline saying we need to move this forward. We don't want a 10-year process. We want a 7-year process.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, in the first year, the thought is to have the report completed, since we're starting in May, to have a report completed by next May.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think we've exhausted this area. It's obviously very important area to the legislature, the whole pre-K, and I've certainly been more educated on the subject, and I think that in itself has been very helpful. As was mentioned, there's two different opinions on how much money should go to this pilot project, and I think you've certainly justified, at least to me, the $2 million. But I do would like to see the legislature a little more involved in the process, because we do have a lot of interest in it. We have a lot of bills pertaining to that area. As is this bill here, obviously, this is a more comprehensive approach, and as was mentioned, your fiscal note is quite large, $83 million. In my personal opinion, and I think the co-chairs as well, I don't think we're quite ready to move this bill forward yet, because there is a lot of activity in this area, but what we do want to see is a more comprehensive, unified approach to pre-K, other than this scattered program, and I think that's what this council is trying to do as well. So we'll look forward to more update on this next year, and again, as much as possible, keep us involved over the interim. That's.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I know we're running out of time, but I need to make a statement.
Sure.
Please.
Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate all the testimony and the reports that have come before us, but we've done very little to address the bill that's before us. And I was hoping that would begin the process today. We keep talking about this $83 million note that's on it, but this bill is not going to happen just overnight. This is to make sure that we have a statewide program. We don't need to continue a pilot program. They've done great with the pilot, and they do need the third year. I grant them. I want them to have the third year. Do I want to expand the pilot program in the state? No, because we don't need it. We know that it works, and we know that we need to pick up all four-year-olds that need to come to school, preschool, pre-K. Early childhood programs are doing their part. Everybody else can do their part. But in the end, we have to put it in the statute that we will allow four-year-olds to come to our schools for pre-K. And I think we should take the time to go through this bill. And even if we moved it along, it doesn't mean that there's any money going to be appropriated this year or the next year. I have on here 2013. That could be 2014. But at least address it. And let's don't keep talking about adding a few more kids. I was looking at the children that they are serving. Yeah, they're doing a great job with the ones that they are serving, but you looked at it, a whole group of kids are not able to be in those programs. They're not in their areas, or their parents don't know about it. And besides that, education should be considered more at the local level than it should be coming down state, DED, telling district high to run their programs. They will figure that out. And we need to look at this bill. I don't know if you mean that you're setting it aside and not going to hear it anymore, but I think we need to have the time. And I'm going to have some hearings on it one way or the other to try to let other folks know about this. But I don't see how we can say that we have given the consideration to Senate Bill 6. We haven't even discussed it. All we've done is got reports from everybody else and what else is not working and working. But Senate Bill 6 has not been addressed by this committee.
Okay.
And you're saying you don't want to address it because of the physical note. That doesn't make sense.
Well, I think if we were to pass a comprehensive approach like Senate Bill 6, which I think we all support in concept, I just don't know personally if we're ready for it. I haven't heard from the Fairbanks School District, all the school districts statewide, if they're even prepared to handle kids three through five who want to go to pre-K programs through the public school system.
I know we don't have time for the debate on that, Mr. Chairman, but the school districts are saying that they are ready for this program. They are saying that school board members, superintendents, principals, families, saying they are ready for the program. They need the program. And we ought to want to help as many children as we can to get an early start in education. And the best way to do that is begin from the beginning. When we bought five-year-olds on for kindergarten, people were complaining that we couldn't afford it. But we did. And all we have to do is step up to the plate. If the Education Committee can't step up to the plate, who's going to do it?
Okay. Well,
you're not going to be financed.
But, okay. Again, I have not heard from any of the school districts. I think Superintendent Como briefly touched on it, that they might be able to get some of the schools prepared to handle the kids. But that's only one school district. Senator French, did you have a comment?
Just a quick comment. And I know we all have appointments, so I've got to run. I love Senator Davis's passion. Yeah, I'm always humbled by it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate the time that the committee's put into this bill. I would like to have at some point a discussion with the administration over the fiscal note, because I think it does bear some examination. On the other hand, you know, I'm realistic. We're struggling to get an increase to the BSA this year. That's going to be a struggle to get an increase to the BSA. So whether the bill sits here or whether the bill sits in finance, frankly, I'd just have it soon sit here so we can do more work on it. Because once it goes up there, I don't know that it moves again. This is not the right time to have a long discussion about it, but I just want to chip in and then I got to run.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that. I never asked that this bill move to finance. What I said to you was that we haven't put enough time in it. I never asked that it be moved to finance. But I don't want it to be set aside and we not discuss it.
Okay. Oh, very good. We can discuss the bill some more next week. Would you like to do that Monday? I mean,
you guys are the chair. You decide when you're going to do it. But I do want some discussion on the bill.
Okay. Well, we can continue the discussion. Next week, Senator Thomas is going to conduct the meetings, and we do have somebody scheduled for next
Monday. We've got
Monday.
The university scheduled on Monday, I believe, and Wednesday.
Engineering building.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah, next week it sounds like the shift is going, we're going to shift our attention more to the university level, but I think later on the week or even the week after that we could take up this bill specifically, and perhaps Senator Davis, you can work with us as to what specifically you want to go over in the bill. So until then, we're adjourned until Monday at 8 o'clock.
And we may want to...